This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
And now that heart is beating fast, and that's the rhythm I can dance to. I'm mighty glad I've got a chance to, that one big heart that's beating fast. Tomorrow morning, let it rain. Tomorrow morning, let it pour. Tonight we're in the groove together. Ain't gonna worry about stormy weather. Gonna kick old trouble out the door. Beat out old trouble on the drum. Beat out old trouble on the drum. Beat out old trouble on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Beat me that rhythm on the drum. Beat me that rhythm on the drum. Beat me that rhythm on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Kick him 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 out the door.
Well, well, well. Henrietta's here. I'm in tears. We have a guest who will introduce in a few minutes. Another ornament on this 3CR tree. He's been here longer than she'd like to remember. But, Henrietta, you're not going to believe this. This is the best program on 3CR, because what happens is we get interesting people coming in and chatting to us and telling us about their lives and why they've been radicalised. All right. And we always have trouble getting donations. Now, I just like to remind people, we will be taking donations till the 30th of June. If you want a legal, legitimate tax deduction, and why wouldn't you? You can ring 9419 8377 and make a donation right now. If you want to donate online, if you're, you know, intelligent enough to donate online, unlike me, 3cr.org.au, 3cr.org.au, and you can always send us a text and make a pledge by text, 0488 809 855. So if you are in the fortunate place of paying income tax because of all the investments you have and the work you do, this is a great chance to emulate the, how shall I put it, the rich and infamous, and get your legal, legitimate tax deduction by donating to 3CR Radio Font via the Radical Australian. Now, our guest, Marie Delora, felt so bad about the fact that we are $1,002 behind our total that she's given us $20. Thank you very much.
No,
so that makes it $982 to get. Oh, come on, ring up. And I've got, now, I'll give this to you. Now, I better give it to the front desk. You know me. Delora, are you, Marie, I should say.
I answered both.
Are you really sure you want to give me $20? Sure. Do you know about my history of money?
No idea.
It's not very good.
I'm sure you'll do a good job this time.
I'll be 75 in a few months, and I'm still working part-time as a doctor. That's not a good thing. This is what happens when you bulk bill people. You know, there's no richness. You know, my mates, male and female, have now got their toy boys and their, you know, concubines. They've got their yachts, and here I am, still working. It's unbelievable.
I bet now, your patients are happy to have you.
Nah.
I'm sure they are.
Marie, M-A-R-E-E, Delora. Where does that come from?
My mum.
Your mum?
Yeah, she liked it.
And where did she come from?
She was born in Oakley.
Oakley? Oakley? Oakley?
Yep.
You're kidding.
No, she was born
Did
in
she
Oakley.
Make up that name, Delora?
Oh, no, that's her married name.
That's her married name.
Yeah, that was my father's surname.
Right. Did she ever meet any of your grandparents?
She did. Yeah, she did. She met his dad,
uh-huh.
Alessandro Delora.
Alexandro.
Yeah, but She didn't meet any of the old. Well, I had never queried her as to everyone she met, but I don't think she met any of the older ones.
Is she still with us?
No.
No. What was she like as a mum?
Fantastic.
Why did you say that?
Oh, she was a beautiful person.
Well, everybody says that about their mother.
I know. Well,
what was distinguishing about her?
About her?
Yeah. What was her name first?
Peggy.
Peggy. Yeah.
Compassion.
Yep.
Generosity.
God.
You can imagine.
It's the type of stuff we don't need in the 21st century. Well, we need hatred and division, don't we?
Well, things are looking black for some leaders around the world, that's for sure.
Yeah. So she's compassionate, generous. How shall I put this? Did you have any contact with your father?
Any contact?
Yeah.
Of course, you had to. She had four kids.
Oh, there you go. I mean, I'm just saying. Sometimes you get people come here and there's divorces and
people,
you know. So Dad was part of the family.
Yes.
And what was his name?
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey.
Mm-hmm.
Not very Italian.
No.
And Peggy.
Yep. No.
And what was... But his surname was Delora.
Yep.
And did he have a Latin American or Spanish background?
No. His grandfather was... came to Australia. His father's father.
Yep.
Came to Australia from Italy, and his father's mother was Irish.
Right.
She's probably the one who chose Jeffrey.
Bloody Catholics. That's
they were all Catholics together,
exactly.
I imagine.
Yeah, Italian Catholics, Irish Catholics.
That's right.
Because, you know, in those days, we find it ludicrous, there was this Protestant-Catholic divide, which was real.
Yeah. Oh, I remember when I was a child.
Yeah.
There was, people would say, oh, they're Catholics.
Yeah.
It was a serious thing in Melbourne back years ago.
Well, you know, Colonial Melbourne was established... Look, I'm full of useless facts, but Colonial Melbourne was established in 1836, and the first riot that occurred was outside the Loyal Orange Lodge in 1841 between the Catholic labourers and the Protestant bosses.
Incredible.
It's incredible, yeah. Mm. And remember the old days? You'd go to school, that's if you go... Did you go to a Catholic school?
No.
Well, I went for 1 year before my father pulled me out. But you go, dirty Catholic, eat frogs, all this type of shit. And that was 60 years ago.
It was a serious division, that's for sure.
It was very serious. Obviously, it came from the Irish struggle for independence.
Oh, well, look at poor old Ned Kelly and all of that Irish history.
Yeah. So what do you know about this early great-grandfather?
Well, it's a lot of it's lost in the fog of time, actually. But I know that he is supposed to have come to Australia with his brother, two Italian brothers, one 15 and one 14.
Right.
And they were supposed to come to Australia to become priests.
Must have come from a big family.
Yeah, I think part of their family settled in... country Victoria.
Yeah, there's the Swiss Italian. Were they Swiss Italian?
Yes, because they were from, I imagine they were Swiss Italian. They were from Domo d'Ossola.
Yeah, because if you come out of Ballarat, that's the area where the Swiss Italians actually set up shop, and there's still a lot of names, even a Swiss Italian pub still.
Mm.
I don't know what type of food it serves, but the Swiss Italians were very... I think the Barassi family were Swiss Italians.
Were they? Wangaratta, that's where his brother settled.
Settled in Wangaratta.
But not him, he didn't settle there. He met his wife in Queensland.
Queensland.
She was born up there, but there's a certain... I think it was his brother who must have settled in Wangaratta.
Because, you know, in Italy, in the old days, the first son was to make a living, the second son was to look after you when you're old, and the third son could go to the church. That was the way it worked. So they must have sent two sons to Australia. Must have been.
They probably had quite a few.
Yeah, and it was poverty and people get, that's interesting. You ever thought of chasing it up?
One of my cousins has chased it up and I think my brothers have got a fair amount of information.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
You could have one of these huge family gatherings.
We did have a kind of reunion in Wangaratta years ago.
Right, right.
And there was a guy there from... The thing is, the original surname wasn't Delora, it was Deloro with an O and with an apostrophe in the middle.
So actually...
Somewhere in Melbourne...
You anglicised it.
Yeah.
Easier to spell.
Yeah. And there was a Deloro family in Wangaratta.
Mm.
And some of them were the spitting image of some of us. Like one of my brothers, it was an absolute... A guy was a spitting image of me.
Now, can I tell you something you can do if you're bored at a funeral?
Mm.
And it's something I do. You look around and you try to pick who is genetically related. And you're quite right. It's amazing how.
Genetics is such a strong thing, isn't it?
Well, unbelievable. It is. Yeah, it's just. What do they say? It's genetics or culture or upbringing. You can't. Mm. You can't run away from your genes, can you?
No, environment, you can, but.
Yeah.
Nature
or nurture. See, Henrietta speaks, but you've refused to speak in the microphone. You know, I don't know why, but for months I've been trying to coax her to say things. She's now saying things into the ether.
You should interview her.
There's no way she'll let me talk to her. No way.
When's somebody going to interview you? That's what they should do.
When I achieve my 50th anniversary, which will be July next year, I'll
at 3CR.
At 3CR. That's my 50th.
50 years. 50 Mamma
years.
Mia.
How many years have you? Mamma mia.
Yeah.
How many years have you been at 3CR?
Well. The first programs we did were in the 80s because they were for the Sandinistas. We had a lot of programs and then Nicaraguans came.
So you'd be a 40-year-old 3CR.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, easily.
In the 80s, Barry Carr, Professor Barry Carr was one of the first, and Ros Eason.
Right.
And, they were sort of the very first founders, and I was just a satellite figure trying to help out.
You were another Henrietta, were you?
Yeah. And then as time wore on, they didn't continue.
Yeah, they died, did they?
No, not at all. And Flora Osorio became the coordinator of the whole thing.
Right.
She did it for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And then she's now in Colombia.
Yeah.
But, then I started to...
So what program is this you're talking about?
Latin American Update.
So how long? That's been going for over 40 years.
Yes.
And you've been associated with it for over 40 years. Has much changed in Latin America?
Oh, God. Things have got better. Tragically, things that have got better are now going backwards.
Right.
Chile, for example.
Yes.
The monstrous slaughter of Allende and the destruction of his fantastic socialist government.
Mm.
And then years went on and there was horrible transition governments and then gradually they got slightly more enlightened governments and they got to presidents who, you know, they weren't extreme lefties but they were trying to do the right thing. And now they've reverted to Cast, who is an extreme right winger, like the Pauline Hanson of Chile.
Mm-hmm.
Tragic. And they're trying to, and Donald Trump is currently trying to do exactly the same thing in Colombia and Mexico.
Mm.
He just gave huge sums of money to an alternative guy in Colombia. There's this, the current president in Colombia, who's finishing up next weekend. Well, that's when the second round of the elections. Gustavo Petro, he's been fantastic. He's really tried to change. He can't change things instantly, but he's made a lot of incredible attempts to improve life for people, for the First Nations people, for working people, to try and help get, you know, compete with the whole drug world, do what he can. And, of course, Donald Trump loathes him.
Mm.
And the person that they have chosen to follow on from him, they've paid millions of dollars to an extreme right-wing figure.
Tens of millions.
Yeah.
You don't get much for $1 million. You can't. Looking at the Domain Prestige property guide this morning, as I do, you know. And there was a house in Brighton I wouldn't even consider buying because it's too cheap. It was $15.5 million. So, as I said, you can't do much with $1 million these days.
That is so true.
Yeah. Now, how come are you – why are you so passionate about Latin America? You started the interview off like a sensible human being and then all of a sudden this passion and compassion came through the microphone. What interested you in Latin America?
I just started to learn about it and, you start to see need in people, horrible things. And also because I was really, passionate about languages, and because I became speaker of Spanish, I could really help people.
Right.
So one of the first jobs I had, I went for an interview at the Education Department, and I said to them, you know, I've studied Spanish. I'd been teaching in Spain. You might as well send me to some school with Spanish-speaking kids because I can help the parents, and you know. And sure enough, they did.
Well, that's good. Let's go back. What year were you born?
Well, that is a key question, isn't it? I hate to say this, but it's probably the same year as you.
What, 1951?
50. So, soy mayor que tú.
Scusi. Occhio male. Malaiochi. This is to keep her away, the evil eye.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
You're one of them, I can tell.
Yes,
I carry that with me, the evil eye, just to keep people like you out of my reign. Yes. It's fascinating. I'm going to have to show you some respect because you're my elder.
Si, senor.
See, and how come my hair's white and yours is...
Ever heard of hair dye?
You're kidding. No.
You'd be surprised.
You mean if I dyed my hair, I'd look younger?
You would.
No, I don't want to do that.
Why should you?
Exactly.
There's absolutely no obligation need.
So why are you dyeing your hair?
Do you want the long answer or the short answer?
Long answer. It's always best.
Do you know much about the situation of women in the current society?
Yes, yes.
And
you get run over if you've got white hair because nobody notices you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, judges on your looks. And we're the exact opposite.
The distinguished man.
That's right.
Should have white hair. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's very important.
But the elderly woman should not.
Exactly.
Well,
I mean, come back in about 50 years, we may have progressed to the point where it's not an issue, or we may have gone backwards, as we have in a lot of politics.
No, we can share a lot of stories because we're the same age bracket. We're early baby boomers. So where did you go to primary school?
I went to Hughesdale State School.
I know where Hughesdale is.
Do you?
I had a patient there who's now
dead. A lot of people don't know.
I know Hughesdale.
Mm.
Yeah, and remember the Greek... restaurant across the road, wasn't it? Yeah, Hughesdale.
Well, it's a tremendous Greek community now, fantastic in Oakley.
Yeah.
Every time I'd go back to visit my parents and I needed a birthday cake, I could be as late as I liked from work because two cake shops in Oakley, you could go, like all the rest of the cake shops in Melbourne are shut at 4 o'clock. But the cake shops in Oakley, the Greek ones, you could go and buy a birthday cake at 9 p.m. or 8 p.m. and still go to the party. And
nobody would notice.
Well, I mean, you didn't have to plan so much because normally I would have to rush out of work and buy a cake somewhere.
Yeah, what I love about Oakley these days, because I hardly ever eat meat anymore, is when you go through Oakley, when you go to where all the restaurants are, the centre of Oakley, there's the smell of burning meat. It's like a open barbecue.
It's a lovely little shopping centre, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me Oakley Shopping Centre every day compared with, say, Chadstone. I used to walk to Chadstone when I was a kid, and it was only a tenth of what it is now. It's
amazing.
Yeah.
Amazingly bad. Now, what was it like at Hughesdale Primary School? Was it just little Anglo-Saxon kiddies, or at that stage there were little devils like me turning up?
No, there was mixtures, but it was dominated. The teachers and that tended to be Anglo-Saxon. And there were kids. Funnily, kids would have all kinds of names. We wouldn't even think much about it.
No, right.
You just learn to pronounce it, you know. As best
Papamiliotis.
Yeah, well, you say it as best you could, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, I hate to say it, but I enjoyed being at school.
There's nothing wrong with that. You know, this is very unusual. Most people who come to this program who've been activists for many years did enjoy school because in many regards it was a relief from the drudgery of everyday life because it wasn't easy because your parents were working hard, they were trying to make ends meet, and school was wonderful.
It was a chance for attention yourself, sort of thing.
Yeah, I enjoyed school.
Did you?
Apart from being
chased. What school did you go to?
I went to St. Brendan's for 1 year.
Where's that?
In Brisbane.
Oh, yeah.
Salisbury. And then I went to primary school. I went to Maruka State High School.
Is that in Queensland too?
It's in Brisbane. It's in Maruka. Obviously.
They tend to call them state high schools, don't
that's
they?
That's right. No, Queensland. It's a state primary school.
Oh.
It actually had a swimming pool.
You're kidding.
Oh, God, it's just extraordinary. Yeah, I know.
Fantastic.
So, obviously, you're great. Sure. Yeah. So you graduated from primary school, and where'd you go after that?
I went to McKinnon High, now called McKinnon Secondary.
Yeah, have you ever been to the McKinnon pub?
Yeah.
What, as a high school student?
We used to have to wait for buses outside the McKinnon Hotel and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of a... I met a friend there once and I thought it was a bit drab inside, you know.
Little spot around McKinnon Station, McKinnon Hotel.
So, yeah, it doesn't seem to have gone far, does it? No. Well, it doesn't matter. So what was high school like?
McKinnon High, well, there are about 45 kids in every class.
Yeah, that's standard.
Yeah, and it was, it wasn't quite as easy as primary school. But, you know, you get used to every system, don't you?
Oh, that's all you know. And your parents are going, they're not rich enough to send you to a private school. It doesn't work that way, does it? You go to the nearest high school.
That's right.
And you walk to school.
Well, it wasn't actually the nearest. By that point, Murrumbeena was the nearest to where we were living. Well, but my older sister had gone to McKinnon High and I could wear the uniform.
Right. Oh, yeah, hand me down.
Most of my friends went to Murrumbeena because that was closer to Hughesdale Primary and closer to where they
were. So how did that ruin your childhood?
What's
that? Your teenagehood, the fact that most of your friends were at Murrumbeena and you're at McKinnon. Did you meet on the weekends or did you lose your friends?
Well, we kind of drifted apart because if you're going to a different school and you're 11 years old, it's not easy to, organise.
Did you graduate?
Graduate what?
From year 12.
Year 12? No, we didn't have graduations. We just kind of drifted off. You did these exams, and I was absolutely astonished after I left school that one of the teachers, only one, rang me up.
Rang you up?
But in general, we didn't have a graduation. We had actually, the last day we were at school, they absolutely abusive towards us because we put balloons in.
Yeah, it was muck-up day.
It wasn't very serious muck-up day. But they had this kind of teacher who loved to throw tantrums, and she, our last day, she pretty much, you know, you just told us off and said you'll have to clean all those balloons up and you can imagine.
Yeah, that's right. You'd have a muck-up day.
But as far as graduation, did you have a graduation from yours?
Of course not.
Hmm. It wasn't a thing, was it?
You know, I finished high school in 1969. You would have finished in 68, wouldn't you?
67.
You must have been a bright student, unlike me. All right.
No, it was just the system. But, these days people graduate from kindergarten.
Right. Yeah, they do. My granddaughter showed me her graduation certificate from kindergarten last year.
It's incredible to you.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, they probably enjoy it. I'm not against it. It's just not something that went on.
No,
1967, as you can imagine, as you know.
But you'd look in the newspaper for your results, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
How did you go?
Not too bad.
What does that mean?
Well, that's why one of the teachers called me. I did very well in French.
Uh-huh.
And so she rang up to say that that's when I was really shocked because there was no contact with teachers or any kind of ceremonial stuff. See, usually the staff didn't really know her, didn't have any contact with how the kids went, you know.
Yeah,
so if you went well or you didn't go well, they went off into the ether.
Yeah.
And you kind of rushed out to get the age and find out how you did.
Yeah.
Computers, of course, didn't come for another...
Yeah, yeah.
God, 40 years or something.
Yeah, my French tutor, I did French in year 11 and 12, and he was obviously gay, but in those days you wouldn't come out as a teacher because you get fired.
Oh, my God, it'd be terrifying.
He used to, on the last day of term, he'd have a ticket to go to Paris and he'd come back on the first day of the new year, and that was his routine. That's how he he spoke brilliant French.
I bet he did.
Mm. Yeah. So where did that lead to? Some type of horrible little university course? Or?
Yes. It wasn't horrible, but...
What did you do?
Well, I was really loving languages, so I studied a whole bunch of languages and...
Where?
Psychology. Monash.
Monash, obviously.
Yeah. Well, Monash is just down the road. Mind you, there were no trains to get to Monash.
No.
You had to take... You know, you had to get different buses and make connections.
Yeah, or have friends.
Yeah, have friends with cars.
Cars.
Was that what you did?
No, I didn't go to Monash.
All right.
Where did
you go?
I went to Queensland University
for my Bachelor of
Medicine and Science. Then I did my doctorate at Melbourne University. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even look down at Monash, to be honest. Those days are gone. That's all bullshit, obviously.
Well, that years ago they used to call Melbourne University the shop.
Yes.
And Monash the farm.
That's right, because it was out there.
Because it was out in the sticks. Yeah. These days it's utterly residential out there.
It's amazing.
Well, my parents used to tell me that Warrigal Road, Oakley, was all, farms and market gardens, they used to call them.
Mm.
So, and you'd drive down there and it'd all be market gardens. Now it's all tightly, bunched up with flats and units.
I understand that Warrigal meant wild dog in the original, First Nations language. So.
Did it?
Yeah. Well, that's what I was told. Who knows? These days, facts don't matter, do they?
Well, it sounds convincing.
Sounds convincing. Mm. So did that lead to any degrees or anything?
Yes. I did a few different degrees.
A few different degrees. You're one of these permanent students.
No, not at all.
Because there was no fees in those days.
That's right.
Yeah. Wow. So what type
Tragically, I mean, the poor old students these days, I think half their life goes on HECS and trying to pay off HECS, whereas...
Oh, it's disgusting.
If you had a Commonwealth Scholarship, as you would remember,
yep.
Or after a while, even Commonwealth Scholarship wasn't even relevant because after Whitlam...
Yeah, there's no fees.
There were no fees, which is such a brilliant idea. Yeah. Such a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it was. And I remember you'd spend 2 or 3 months working so you could enjoy yourself at university.
That's right.
You know what killed university?
Mm-mm.
Continuous assessment.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the good old days?
Well, that's even in years 11 and 12, school assessed coursework.
Yeah. Continuous assessment. People are constantly on the books. Mm-mm. I remember you go to a lecture if you felt like it. You swat up at the end of the year, you sit your exam and you either passed or failed.
Well, that's the system when I was when I was at school and university, that you just did the exam and if you did okay in the exam, it was good.
Now you did mention Spain. How did that come about?
Well, I taught for 2 years and then...
Where did you teach? Can you tell us?
Yes, Morty Chelsea High.
Oh, very nice. Morty Alec and Chelsea High. Very nice part of the world.
Yes, and then I said...
What, there were Spanish kids down there?
No, this was before I went.
All right.
But I had studied Spanish, so then I went to Europe and I thought I was going to become brilliantly fluent in French because that was what I'd studied at secondary school. But I met some Spanish students and people and they said, why don't you share a flat with us? And so I lived in Spain for several years.
Where in Spain?
Barcelona.
Barcelona.
That's right.
Did you see the bullet holes?
No, which bullet holes?
What's that major thoroughfare in Barcelona?
Paseo de... Well, Plaza...
Las Ramblas.
Yeah.
You can still see the bullet holes from the Civil War.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I went there to have a look at the bullet holes.
Did you?
In 1982. Yeah.
I did get mixed up a little bit with the people I lived with. Did you actually see them?
Yes.
The bullet holes?
Yeah. They were there. Yeah. I was told they were there and they were there. Interesting. No.
She's
speaking. Henrietta's speaking.
Good.
Put on your microphone so the listeners can see. Here, come on. What did you say, Henrietta?
She's asking if you went to Sagrada Familia.
What's that?
It's a big cathedral.
Oh, the cathedral.
Designed by Antoni Gaudí.
I understand it's the Pope's going to visit this year because they're going to open it or something.
Barcelona. Well, they seem to be coming to the... They were talking about finishing it when I lived there, which is years and years and years ago. And they're now saying that maybe they're about to... But they've done a huge amount of work on it.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It looks like a kind of fairy palace. Amazing, isn't it?
It's like one of those medieval cathedrals which took 200 years for the community to build.
That's right.
So what happens to a young Australian who becomes fluent in Spanish when she returns to the motherland?
Well, like I was telling you, I said that I would work in any school if there are any kids who, any families that were Spanish speakers. So they sent me to a school where there were a lot.
Where was that?
That was Clayton Tech.
Why was that? Why were there a lot of Spanish kids there? Were they refugees from the Civil War, their
parents?
Yes,
well, Clayton Tech was very close to Enterprise Hostel. There were kids from El Salvador, Chile, Argentina, Uruguay, and families trying to figure out what Australia was all about. And all. So I felt useful.
Right. And were you useful?
You may have felt useful,
but were you useful?
Well, I mean, that's my summation of it.
So how long did you teach there for?
11 years.
Well, you must have been useful, otherwise I would have shown you the door.
Well, they didn't show me the door.
So all you did was speak, I'm not saying all you did, but did you do any other subjects or just
No,
Spanish?
I taught English and Spanish.
English and Spanish, right.
But we managed to get the school newsletters translated into Italian, Spanish, Greek and Croatian, actually, because we had such a range of kids from the hostel and the parents were all in a fog about what was going on because the ministry paid for multicultural aid, they used to call them.
Oh, we're going to get rid of that. Don't worry about it anymore.
Well, she was fantastic. She was a tremendous help and she spoke Italian and Croatian, so she could help a huge number of parents. And then with me speaking Spanish, we could really
Listeners, if you hear a in the background, that's Henrietta. All right, she doesn't want to use the microphone, but she's happy to make noises in the background.
It's good. We like having her make
now, noise. Now, I reckon it's 4:30. We're halfway through chatting. Yeah, you couldn't believe it. You've done half an hour, Marie.
Yes.
Just to remind people, the Radiophon is still on. We're $982 short. You can donate now. You can ring 9419 8377, 9419 8377. If you're really smart, unlike Marie and myself who don't know what the internet is, you can go to 3cr.org.au/ and donate. And you can do it anonymously if you want to. Obviously, like Henrietta, you don't want to be associated with us. And you can text in your donation to 0488 809 855. And I'd like to remind you, we've got about 300 podcasts out there. Fascinating people. Some of them have died. It's a permanent reminder of who they were and what they did. And that's why you're here, Marie, because one day, you can tell your family. You got any kids?
No, sadly.
All right. You got a partner?
No.
Well, you're just the person.
Not at the moment.
That should do talk, it should do Radical Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you go, we can go to the podcast, and your picture will be there,
mm-hmm.
and we can pick out all these.
Sort of a Tinder.
Yeah. No, it's not a Tinder unless you're necrophiliac. It's, I mean, he's dead, all right? And then they can download the stuff, and it's happened before, and they can use it for your funeral.
Oh, there you go.
Who else is going
to listen? Makes it easier.
Who else is going to listen to you? You've got your rallies trying to work out what are we going to say about Marie.
Yeah, you're
what
right.
What has she done? Mm. You're telling us your whole life story.
No, there you go.
Well, most of it, a lot of it. So why did you leave after 11 years?
Clayton Tech. Well, that's a very good question. Poor old Clayton Tech was shutting down.
Oh, is this the period when we didn't need tradespeople?
Well, it's become a huge chunk of Monash Medical Centre now. Mm. But there were some fantastic people at Clayton Tech, but they didn't save it. It was shut down. But it didn't shut down. I left. They were saying, look, you'll have to find something, So that's when I left because you felt as if, you better hurry up and find something different because this is going, sure enough, the next year or two, a couple of years later.
Do you remember what year this was when it closed down?
Yes. It would have been 1989-90.
So you were basically coming to 3CR, Latin American Update.
Yep.
And then you would go to Clayton Tech and radicalise the youth. Is that what was happening?
Something like that. But we had a Latin American solidarity group called the Latin American Information Centre, which was very vibrant. We had for 10 years we ran, Flora Osorio ran, work brigades to Nicaragua to pick coffee.
I remember those
days. It was more primitive than a work brigade to, say, Cuba because you had to just sleep on a chunk of concrete.
So you went on a work brigade. Have you been to both Cuba and?
Yeah, Nicaragua. Yeah. Well, with Cuba, I've led a few because once you know the ropes, you can help people. But with Nicaragua, I was in a gigantic group.
And what's a gigantic?
Oh, I've forgotten exactly how many, maybe 50 people or something.
Yeah, and in those days, you're talking about a civil war.
It was tragic. The United States made sure that the Sandinista revolution failed by paying Contras in Honduras who were what they did was they targeted key people in villages. Like if you were the mayor, if you were the matron in the hospital, you'd be shot.
That's right.
And that's all out to war. Yep. Well, we had to do it.
Yep.
And, of course, parents and a lot of young people were part of the, military trying to defend a socialist government. And the parents started to say, why don't we just give in to the United States because they'll stop killing us.
Yeah.
And so when the Sandinistas had elections and they were perfectly free and fair elections, they lost. Because people said, we can't have this. What are you having this for? We're all dying.
Yeah.
It was tragic.
So how many times have you been to Nicaragua?
Nicaragua, only once.
Once. And that was something you'll never forget.
Oh, for sure.
Tell us some of the highlights and lowlights.
Of Nicaragua?
Yeah, when you were there. What year was this?
Oh, God, this is about 85.
Okay, I've got to ask you something. You're religiously inclined. You keep asking God for assistance.
Sorry, it's a linguistic device.
Oh, it's a linguistic device. I'm not offended. I'm happy if people have their gods. It's just that I always like to ask whether there's a religious component to the afterlife. Nothing like that.
Sorry.
You're amazed when you've been a doctor 50 years. You kind of have little jokes with people, and they die, and you say, "Give me a sign." I'm still waiting.
You haven't had any signs yet.
No. You know what's going to happen.
Fantastic. You're working as a doctor.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
2 days a week.
Still. It's wonderful.
Yeah. No, well, I don't know. But the thing is, you know, I'm waiting. I'm waiting for a sign. I'm happy to convert.
Yeah.
I'm an apprentice atheist. You know what an apprentice atheist is?
I can imagine.
Well, it's somebody who hasn't faced death. I think only when you face death will you know whether you're a real atheist or whether you're going to call for the gods to assist you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you an apprentice atheist or a real atheist?
I think that when you face death, you may not know anything. You might just be adios amor.
See, Henrietta's talking. You need a bloody microphone, Henrietta. I keep telling you. I can't believe this person. She's incorrigible.
He's doing a great job managing the panel back there.
Well, she does do a great job, but sooner or later I'll get her to talk. Yeah, she'll be talking and then I won't be able to shut her up.
Mm-hmm.
She'll come over this side and she'll
teach
me to do the panel. Yeah.
Actually, you should interview Joe about his life's work and where he, what part of Italy now, he
look,
came from.
Maria, I may get you to do that. You've been here mm-hmm. for 40 years. I mean, I'm
no
comfortable.
Problem.
I'm comfortable
wanna
with you.
Want to be on next Sunday morning?
No. You're going to do Radical Australia middle of next year if both of us are still around.
I'm happy to interview you. I think that you would give a great interview.
I don't know. I'd lie all the time. you're giving a great
no
interview.
Truth tests about it.
No, we don't have a truth meter. Anyway, it's the 21st century. Facts don't matter.
Wow.
It's all about belief systems.
A lot of people, you'd think from what people do.
Now, how many times have you been to Cuba?
Cuba, about five, I think.
Yeah, and you're leading parties now.
I've taken quite a few groups, yes.
Yeah, and what happens? What do you do there?
Well, it's called the Southern Cross
Brigade. Yes,
that's right. So people go from New Zealand and Australia.
Yeah, right.
The Cubans are so grateful because they're so blockaded and sort of under a siege and stymied. And
so how do you get there first from here?
Well, up till right now, you just fly.
Right.
You know, you buy yourself a ticket. So
you
there's lots of ways. You can still go via China. You can go via Turkey.
Right.
You can't go via the USA.
No.
And who would want to, may I say?
Hmm.
But you can go via Mexico, you can go to Chile.
Which way does the Southern Cross Brigade usually go?
There's no rule. You see, when first we were doing it years and years ago,
right.
We used to go to Japan Airlines and book 24 seats.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew we'd get more than 24 people.
Right.
And then as people started saying, yeah, I'll go, they would buy the seats. But first of all, no airline will save you 24 seats or reserve them in advance. And secondly, as things got, you know, what's the word, more dangerous with airlines and all that, they want to know who's having this seat from the very first minute.
Mm.
And so you can't do any kind of reserving like that. And so what we do is just tell people, look, you may be able to travel with other people. You need to buy your own ticket and arrive
sense.
In Cuba on the whatever, say 28th of December. We'll meet you. They'll meet you in the airport with a bus.
Yep.
And if you can get there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, if you can't, don't worry. We'll find a way to find you.
Mm. And what do they do? How long do they usually stay and what do they do?
It's usually about 3 weeks.
Yep.
And there's this place called the Campamento Julio Antonio Meja, which it's named after a heroic Cuban. It's a kind of, it's called a campground, but it's really dormitories.
Right.
It's not tents or something.
Mm. Mm.
And they always take overseas groups there. And so nearby there's a whole lot of citrus orchards. So they like us to help pick fruit.
Right.
Other things we've done have been help build a sort of apartment building for pilots. So trying to dig trenches and lay bricks and stuff like that. Pick beans, plant beans, whatever jobs they think a bunch of funny looking overseas people could do. Also, you know, if you really haven't, they'll say, oh, look, like one stage they had two elderly women straightening nails. So all they had to do was try and straighten them.
Yeah.
And there's no sort of judgment about how well you straighten them.
No.
But so they
except
try
when the carpenter tries to put them into
well,
the
that's
wall.
Right. There
then there'll be
it.
A lot of swearing then, but you don't know who you're swearing at.
That's right. But if you happen to be an electrician or a plumber, they absolutely fall on you with great bliss and ask you to fix the toilets or try and fix the electrical.
Mm.
So if you ever go to the Campamento in Caimito, we help build the dining room.
Oh, we, I like that.
But I mean the group.
Are you still involved in the Cuban Friendship group?
Yeah.
So how can people become involved?
How can they become involved?
Mm.
Well, we've got a Facebook page.
What's
we've
it called?
We've got a website. It's called Australia Cuba Friendship Society Melbourne.
Right, Australia Cuba Friendship Society Melbourne.
Well, we're having an activity on the 26th of July.
What are you doing?
We're going to show a film, and we've got two people, two young guys who went on the work study tour last year. They're going to speak, tell us what happened, how they enjoyed it. And we're also planning to, you know, we'll bring food and stuff like that.
Obviously, the Cuban ambassador turns up occasionally.
We have invited her, but the 26th of July is a big day in Cuba, so she's been invited to go to Sydney.
Oh, right.
But we have, in the past, brought the Cuban ambassador here. The last two have been women, actually.
Yep.
And the second last one was an incredible lawyer.
Right.
Who's an expert on... She worked in Washington on why Cuba should not be on the list of state sponsors of terror. Mm-hmm. I think she also taught law in university. But she was very well, you know, what's the word, educated.
Yeah,
but you don't get any respect if you're Cuban.
No. Now, after those 11 years at that Clayton's Tech College, was it at Clayton? Yeah, it was Clayton.
Clayton Tech School.
What did you do for a living?
Well, because they were shutting it down, I started looking for jobs.
Yeah.
And I got a job in what was called Paran School Support Centre.
Oh, yep.
And that was school support centres, I don't know if you remember way back, they were centres that had kind of teachers and people to support. Like there was speech therapists and interpreters, Vietnamese interpreters and Italian interpreters. And I was there as what they called a... ESL Multicultural Consultant.
Could you explain to our listeners, please explain ESL?
Well, ESL, back in at that time when I got that job, ESL was English as a Second Language. It's now gone out of favour and it's called EAL.
What's that?
English as an Additional Language.
Oh.
Just not to insinuate that you've only got two languages.
Oh, yes.
But
some people like you've got more than two. French, Spanish, English, what else? Croatian?
I can understand a fair bit of Italian because I was in Italy for a little while.
How about Portuguese?
Yes, because Portuguese is a cousin of Spanish.
Mm.
I don't think there's any language so close to English as Portuguese and Spanish and Italian are to each other. I mean, of course, they're separate languages.
Yeah.
But it also depends on if you're interested and you study up on it and all that.
You know, look, you raised this statement, the Southern Cross Brigades.
Yeah.
Now, do you know why we in Australia are so keen about the Southern Cross?
Well, what I understand, you can't see it in the Northern Hemisphere.
Exactly.
They can see it in Argentina.
Bastards.
But that's a really...
it's a real Australian
Southern
thing.
Hemisphere thing. Yeah. And, of course, New Zealanders can see it.
Oh, well, don't worry about them. But, no, you're right.
So that was
So in the old days when you know, your relatives turned up at the gold rushes in the 1850s. You'd be
the
stars
were different.
You'd be in your tent, you'd look up, you've got no Wi-Fi and no mobile phones, no television. I can't believe it, no cassette players. You'd look up in the sky and there's the Southern Cross and you know you're in a different continent.
It must have been a shock when they first realised that the stars were totally different.
Yeah.
Especially if you depend on the stars.
That's right.
And First Nations people have all kinds of connections to the stars.
Have you ever taken any First Nations people to Cuba?
One did go, but I wasn't on that trip.
Right. Just out of interest. Yeah.
Yes, it would be fantastic for some to. Yeah. The Cubans would be thrilled to be able to welcome First Nations people.
Oh, be good. So how long did you last as an ESL human being?
I was only there for about... 2 years, I think.
Yeah, and then?
Then I went to work in the VCAA. Right. Well, maybe VCAA was before the... I was at the VCAA for 1 year and then I think the thing was they had all these exam panels for all different languages. And I was on the Spanish exam panel and they invited me to work in the whole place full time after I worked on that exam panel, but just for a year to fill a gap. And then after that, I got that job in the Paran School Support Centre.
Now, apart from the Latin American update that you do, you're involved in another program, I understand.
Well.
Yes or no? Come on. This is. Come on.
I used to be more so with Ralph Knight when he was doing the Unitarian Half Hour.
Right, right.
But now there's some fantastic people doing the Unitarian Half Hour, so I'm a very much satellite figure.
No, you're a respected elder. You're not a satellite figure. Just you're a respected elder, and occasionally they'll come to you for advice.
No, but, not
but
advice.
But once
they
about
know what they're doing. They're
once
doing
a decade, you. Maybe they'll come along.
No,
maybe they'll have a little party for the old people, you know. Now, the great thing about all your jobs is they'd have superannuation, wouldn't they?
Well, the main job I had,
yeah. Which makes a big difference when,
oh,
you,
God, yes.
when you turn 65. Right. 65, you would have been pensioned off, wouldn't you?
No, you choose. I was still working at 69.
Oh, that's excellent, yeah.
But you can, I think, you couldn't have got a pension earlier than that.
You could have, yeah, 65 in those days, 67 now, unfortunately. Mm. Which is pretty hard for people who work.
Yeah, it's not easy. Yeah, and if you're not very healthy, that's asking a lot.
Yeah, and if you've done hard physical work, by the time you're 60,
right.
you're...
That's right. Being a teacher or that kind of stuff, I mean, it's very draining, but it's not like carrying bricks up and down.
Yeah, it's not having arthritis and collapsed discs and referred pain. I actually had to advise a friend in the last 48 hours to go to hospital and have some investigations. He was a... union organiser, hard working on building sites, and he's now paying the dividend in his mid-60s, you know, could hardly walk. And
it's not fair. Well, I often think a lot of athletes, by the time they get to 45, their knees don't work properly, and
I wouldn't know anything about that.
A lot of AFL footballers seem to have all kinds.
How come you know about AFL footballers here, Marie? What's going on here? Have you got a secret life?
By pure chance, I live in Melbourne.
You live in Melbourne? Do you have a team?
Richmond.
Richmond, yeah. Well, you're looking at a renegade here.
Yeah? What? You don't like AFL football?
No. I pretend I like all sports because
it's
a good way to talk to people. You know, you break the ice. And obviously, being a teacher, you got your students, you ask them, and it's a way of...
Of course. You've got to say something,
don't you? You've got to say something, and,
What's your team?
Well, it used to be Richmond, but then they won 3 grand finals, and I thought, that's enough.
You went off them.
No. I've just moved on to St Kilda because they haven't won one since 66.
Oh, my sister and I will be happy. She loves St Kilda.
Oh, so you've got siblings?
Yeah.
How many?
A sister and 2 brothers.
And they're still with us?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. What do they think of that about their wayward sister?
Oh, no, you have to ask them. Very supportive.
You're allowed to go to family gatherings? You know, the little radical from Fresno?
Oh, yeah, they're all radicals too.
All right.
Yeah.
So what did your parents do? Do they put something in the food at Sunday lunch or something? What do they, like you said, they had a strong sense of compassion.
Yes, I think compassion is like, that's the key to any kind of,
You know what I really hate?
What?
I hate people who come in here.
Yeah.
Or people you know, who've forgotten where they come from.
Mm.
And there are so many Australians out there who started off very humbly, like our beloved Prime Minister, single mother, supporting parents, benefit. You didn't have to go to work at the age of when the kid turned 10. You know, Ministry of Housing, you know, stable accommodation, secure, and they forget where they come from. And there are so many people who forget where they've come from and the struggles their parents or their carers went through to get them there.
That's right.
And it's a huge tragedy. So I think everybody should remember where you come from, you know?
I totally agree. But there's another angle to that.
Yes.
Which is that if you get deeply into another culture and another language, it becomes part of your identity. So not to say you're leaving behind what you are. Of course not.
No.
But it does become part of you, you know.
And Marie, I'm a bit concerned about you.
Okay.
I'm very concerned. You're the type of people that my mate Pauline's been talking about. How many generations have you been here? 5, 6 generations?
I don't know. Like I told you, great-grandfather and his brother came here.
That's the 1860s.
Mm-hmm.
That's 180 years ago, 185 years ago. It's a long time ago. Must be at least 5
generations.
Not
as long as the First Nations people.
Well, we don't worry about them, do we? We just tear up the treaty.
did you hear what she said today?
I don't listen to viruses.
Oh, it was hate.
No, the heartbreaking thing is not what she says. It's the fact that so many Australians believe that garbage.
I know, it's sad.
Yeah,
absolutely
because
sad.
It's, you know, we're all, every person in this country apart from Indigenous people have got a past of some type. And 7, 8 generation is the maximum. If you came on the first fleet, You'd be eight generations.
That's right.
And
No comparison,
you know, culture. And it's as if we've got to have one culture.
Mm. That was one of the great projects at the Curriculum Assessment Authority where I was working.
Right.
There was a team of First Nations people.
Yep.
And at that time, we managed to get a grant,
mm-hmm.
and they were trying to introduce the teaching of Aboriginal languages. And there were 12 primary schools when I left that they were teaching.
What year was that?
The year I left, 2020.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, but you've got to bear in mind that no language, tragically, Victorian language
is complete.
Nobody can chat to another person easily.
No.
But there's a lot that can be taught. And, you know.
Well, the further out you get from the Melbourne CBD, the stronger the connections and the more the
world,
especially along the Murray with the Yorta Yorta, they have,
mm-hmm.
you know, strong connection.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying other people haven't got a strong connection, but there isn't that. Stories that have been passed down through the generations, although many of them, like many of the people in the Bunurong and the Wafarong and the was it Woiwurrung, was it Jajawarong, they're all working very hard to bring back that language because, as you know, language is identity.
It is, absolutely. 100%. Yeah. That's right. And when you think that, say, 50 years ago, Aboriginal kids were told not to speak that language.
Oh, hit on the hand.
What a terrible, terrible thing to tell someone.
Yeah.
You know, that's your language, that's your
identity.
Well,
that's what I was told. You wouldn't remember, but that's what we were told because, you know, my parents were migrants. They came in 49.
No, see, I didn't have a first language to be told not to speak. Otherwise, I would have been.
I mean, I was born here and we spoke Italian at home and I didn't speak a word of English till I went to primary school. And there's a lot of kids in that situation and somehow we're not real Australians.
Terrible.
What an extraordinary.
And did they anglicise your name?
Not us. Well, they did. Instead of Giuseppe, it's Joseph, but we kept the surname, obviously. What I was going to ask you, how have you been filling your time since you retired? Have you wild parties, overseas trips? What's going on?
Well, it is true that when you first retire, you think, oh, my God, how am I going to contribute to society?
God again. Good to see.
What am I going to do?
Yeah.
Like I said, it's a linguistic device.
Well, you're not telling us anything. Come on. Spill the beans. What have you been doing?
What am I doing? Well, I'm in the Trade Union Choir, which is a fantastic group of people. If you ever want to meet a beautiful group of people, they're such lovely people.
What, they all dye their hair? Is that why they're beautiful?
I'm not talking about good looking,
right.
As you can imagine. But, yeah, they're lovely people, and a lot of them are much better singers.
So how much time do you spend at practising?
Well, every Thursday night from 6:30 to 8:30.
Right.
To 8.
And you'd perform, what, a few?
Oh, we've had some fantastic performances this year.
Right.
We collaborated with a Palestinian orchestra, and we learned all these songs in Arabic, which were very challenging to learn, as you can imagine, because you haven't got any context. You know, if you're singing a song in English and you see, you know, the swans are flying, you've got an idea of what's coming up. Whereas if you're singing words you don't know, you got no context. It's hard. It's very hard. But we persevered, and finally, because there were five of them and we had a deadline, it was agreed that we'd have a little, little black card that we could have a look at, because we tried to do it like originally. We thought, wouldn't it be great if you could sing in Arabic straight to the audience? With so many songs. But there was a fantastic Egyptian singer who's part of the band. It's called Tarab Ensemble. She has got the most beautiful voice. And we sing a song that she sings, and of course letting her lead. It's a whole different world because her voice is so fantastic.
And so who's your choir master these days?
Michael Roper. He's brilliant. He is a fully qualified teacher of music.
Right.
And he plays the piano, accordion, the guitar, the piano.
And he's young.
No,
it's your age. He's retired too. Yes. Unbelievable.
But I think he still works part-time in a primary school.
And then if there's people out there interested in the choir, how do they contact the choir?
Ah, well, the choir has a website and a Facebook page.
Yeah, what's it called?
The Facebook page, Victorian Trade Union Choir. Just put VTUC into Facebook and it'll come up. Or put VTUC into Google.
Yeah.
And Victorian Trade Union Choir will come up.
Look, I must admit I have heard you a few times and you are excellent. rendition, as they say. I mean, I was surprised. I even had tears in my eyes one day, but don't tell anybody that.
No, well, it can be. It is very moving. And I mean, as I said, those songs in Arabic and other songs, we also sing Bella Ciao and quite several Italian songs.
I've got some bad news for you.
What's that?
Because I did a lecture on the...
It's not a real Italian song.
Well, it wasn't sung by the resistance. It was only taken up in the 50s later on. And it's actually a bastardisation of some traditional folk songs.
So what? Nobody who was against Mussolini even thought about singing Bella Ciao?
Not till the 50s. It's interesting. I was quite amazed.
Because there's quite a few online sites that tell you.
That's
it
right.
Was.
Yeah, well, it's not. Well, I could be wrong, but it is the 21st century, so I believe I'm right.
It's a great song, though.
It's a great song.
It's very moving.
And
ending up dead under the flower, people going past the flower on a mountainside. And
if you're really after a revolutionary song, there's the Lugano song, Return to Lugano.
What's it called, Return to Lugano?
Lugano, in Switzerland, L-U-G-A-N-O, when these refugees were evicted out of, in the early 20th century, out of Switzerland, back to Italy, refugees. But doesn't mean Bella Ciao isn't a wonderful song.
What about Avanti Popolo? Are you going to tell me that's not really a revolutionary song either?
Well, I didn't say it wasn't. I just said the resistance didn't. It wasn't their song.
And what about Avanti Popolo? Where did that come from?
I assume it's a Communist Party song.
All right.
Advance the People. Yeah, it sounds like it.
Oh, you don't know it? If you heard it, you'd say, oh,
I know the song.
All right.
It'll be some type of socialist, communist thing. Nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Now, what else? You've got 2 minutes. Come on, spill the beans.
Oh, my God.
I'm sick of this God stuff. No.
What do I do with my time? I'll try to help around the Unitarian Church, which is a very progressive church.
Yes, but doesn't believe in God, which suits you.
Well, that's right. you don't. And the thing is, why should people who are religious be the only ones that get together on Sunday, talk to each other, have a good speaker, sing and go home?
Yep.
Or have morning tea or whatever? Why couldn't you do that even though you weren't really...
Where are you hoping to relocate? Where are you hoping to relocate the Unitarian Church?
Well, somewhere in the CBD, hopefully.
Somewhere in the CBD, right.
But it's really sad, but millions of dollars are needed to, what's the word?
Update.
Yeah, to repair the plumbing and the roof's got big problems.
Well, the tragedy was that when they did all that work that your main tenants left because they couldn't work.
Well, that's right. There was dust and there was racket because, the hospital next door dug an underground car park. It took months and months and months. You can imagine digging out. And all the dust and noise, the tenants in the Unitarian Church who were keeping the church afloat were a computer company. And they had all this delicate machinery and they finally said, look, sorry, all that dust and all that noise, we cannot, we're leaving.
They can't blame them.
No.
Now, Marie.
Yes.
Dolora.
Si, senor.
It's been a pleasure chatting
Igualmente.
With you. Igualmente. Bene, grazie tanto, ragazza.
Grazie.
See, I'm hallucinating. I called you a young woman, ragazza. Invece di donna. Donna Maria.
Si.
Marie, no Maria.
Don Giuseppe.
Don Giuseppe, that's right. How did you know about my I can't say it on radio, can I?
Che cosa?
They'll say the mafia, my mafia. You only call a Don, mafia person.
Oh, do you?
In Sicily. Don. Don Luigi.
I thought you called
Don Giuseppe. No. Professore.
Professore.
You call him professore. That's a mark of respect. You call him professor.
In Spanish, any older person can be called Don.
Don. Not in Italy.
Don Pedro, Don Pablo, Don.
No, we're not like that. Professore. Teachers. Professore.
But you are a doctor anyway.
Yeah, but I'm not a professor.
Dottore.
Marie Dolora, with an A, not an O. Grazie for coming into the studio. Grazie, Henrietta, for not talking.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, we've got a minute. Well, we can ask people to donate to 3cr.org.au, to the Latin American update, the program.
Yes.
When is it on?
Sunday mornings at 10:30.
10:30, half an hour or an hour?
Half an hour.
Were you involved in this week's?
Yes.
What's the main topic coming up?
Well, it's the Colombian elections because the elections are actually on the 21st of June.
Right.
And will this incredible right, extreme right-wing guy. Mm. He's actually a US citizen.
Oh, wonderful.
And a Colombian citizen.
Wonderful.
Will he be able to topple the progressive, which would be absolutely tragic? Because if he gets into power, he's got all his plans for mining huge areas.
Good.
For fracking.
Good.
Fracking whole areas. And in Colombia, there's areas called páramos, which...
You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.